Table for Three, a podcast of the Green Duck Lounge Project. I'm playwright Michelle Tyrene Johnson. In Table for Three, we're talking about issues raised in the recent MU production of the Green Duck Lounge. Today, we're talking about civil rights history and activism, and especially the leadership of Black women in St. Louis and throughout Missouri, historically and today. Joining me at today's table is Dr. Kiana Irvin. Kiana is a St. Louis native and professor of history at MU. She's an affiliate member of MU's Department of Black Studies. Kiana's new book is Gateway to Equality, Black Women and the Struggle for Economic Justice in St. Louis. Also with me at the table is Tiana Glass. Tiana is also a St. Louis area native from Ferguson. She just graduated from MU studying women's and gender studies. And she's an entrepreneur as the owner of Black Honeybee Cosmetics, created through the Missouri Student Union's entrepreneurial program. Thanks, Kiana and Tiana, for joining me here today. So I'm excited. We've already been talking about these issues, but what I love about talking about the background you come from is women, the discussion of women. And I will admit part of it comes from having seen Black Panther movie twice this weekend. Have you both seen it?
Yeah, we saw it the same time.
In fact, we were sitting just two seats away from each other Thursday night showing. Yeah. I've seen it three times.
That is so funny. So, as we know, that is particularly a movie that, even though the Black Panther is male, that is a movie about empowerment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at what's happened in our modern day civil rights movement, so to speak, women have been a particularly big face of civil rights movement. Ken, I'm going to start with you. Sure. What? Because you literally written a book about it. Yeah. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's neat about what's going on today is this kind of recognition of women's political leadership in racial justice movements. You know, that's something that I think is significant when we think about kind of past movements and how women often have been kind of sidelined in particular ways. And I think that's a really important kind of recovery work that's happening. You know, that there are people around those who are kind of leading movements today who are really putting an emphasis on the importance of women's leadership, and the kinds of like ways that they challenge the way that movements operate, right? Mm-hmm. They're really trying to kind of act in more egalitarian ways. I think that's an important kind of intervention going on. So I'm excited to see that happening. And it's happening in many different ways. It's really exciting. And a kind of difference between what's going on today and what's happened before.
Yeah. Well, which is a good segue to a question I was going to ask you, Tiana, as the youngest generation of new leaders, how do you think, from your observations, that women lead differently than men?
Well, I always like feel like women are always coming at like an outsider perspective, which grants us the advantage and the opportunity to see how multiple systems of oppression work together and work against us. And I've been able to see that more within myself and with my own activism, like, you know, being a Black woman who was also queer, who was like also lower class, like I'm able to see so much and see or like and understand how these issues affect me and how I know that they can change. So I would definitely say that. And also just like with the other women, Black women that I have worked with in activism, they have also showed me a lot more, you know, of how things have like impacted me or affect me. So,
right. Because the word you didn't use but which is key in these discussions is intersectionality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the really key issue that people sort of leave out of the discussion, even when we're talking about it. Yeah. I'm in the middle of reading a book about Flo Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want to write a play about her. And she was the queen of intersectionality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big part of the movement today, because we see fighting for Black men as a big part, for example, of Black Lives Matters. I mean, it seems like whatever people are talking about, the latest incident that's happened, it typically is a man. Every now and then there'll be something like a Sandra Bland that springs to mind, but a lot of times it's the men. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's purposeful on behalf of the folks, or is that just the way we're steered?
Yeah, I think it's kind of in the water, so to speak. You know, that there's this kind of tradition often of understanding kind of racial injustice through the lens of men's experiences. You know, that black men, the experience of black men, it has like power to mean race and racial, you know, racial justice or racial injustice, right? That they become the kind of symbols for that. And that's mm-hmm. there's a long tradition of that, and kind mm-hmm. of understanding the history of racial justice struggle in the United States and beyond, really. So they're important kind of, there's an important corrective that happens when mm-hmm. when like the Say Her Name campaign, for instance, does important work around, you know, what raising the question of what happens when we position the experience of a Sandra Bland, mm-hmm. right, in the center of our questions around race, class, sexuality, mm-hmm. policing, law enforcement, right, incarceration, all of that. The narrative changes, but that doesn't mean that it kind of, in a sense, it still puts on the table kind of gender questions. And I think when we position women in the story of these movements, we are thinking more broadly and more deeply mm-hmm. about how, as you said, kind of Tiana, how systems of oppression actually work, that we learn something in a more fundamental and maybe deeper sense about the way that these structures operate and how we can dismantle them.
That's always interesting, mm-hmm. this sense that black women put themselves out there, not just for themselves, but for the greater good of everyone else. This is Table for Three. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson, talking with Dr. Kiana Irvin and Tiana Glass here at KBIA Studio. We're talking about civil rights history and activism, and especially the leadership of black women in Missouri, historically and today. To learn more about this podcast and the Green Duck Lounge, go to greenduckproject.com. So one of the reasons why I want to make sure that we had this Table for Three podcast and talk to people from St. Louis is mm-hmm. let's just get real. Yeah. When we talk about civil rights and modern civil rights, Ferguson is right there in the mm-hmm. middle of the discussion. Tiana, you're from Ferguson.
Yes.
So you were here at mm-hmm. MU during what happened in Ferguson. Mm-hmm. You were also here at MU during what happened with mm-hmm. its uprising.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's so funny because I remember the exact, like, I remember everything that I was doing the day that Mike Brown had happened. And everything leading up to that moment, it just really shook me because I think after, well, like, when Mike Brown happened, like, for some odd reason, like, the languages to contextualize everything that I have, like, thought and felt, like, was in my mouth. Mm. Because when I was in fifth grade, I had an uncle that was unlawfully shot by a police. And like, it didn't, like none of that, I could never make the connection until Mike Brown had happened. Mm-hmm. And so that was actually my very first time when I was, you know, engrossed in activism, when I've learned so much about these movements and my part that I needed to play in that. Mm-hmm. And even like still today, like it's, you know, it's always interesting and like sometimes and traumatizing thinking about it because like, there was no way I could have escaped it. To experience it at that day when I was at home in my parents' bedroom, mm-hmm. All the way to like the exact moment when it erupted on campus. So, mm-hmm. and it's feelings that I'm still trying to work through, and I'm yeah. learning to work through, and also still developing the language mm-hmm. to talk about these types of experiences that I felt. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Now that you've graduated, because you mm-hmm. just graduated, is that
yes.
correct? What do you think your newfound education combined with your personal, mm-hmm. you know, background, what's that going to take you into?
Yeah. Well, recently, I've found I'm really passionate about like, environmental justice and how that affects black women and black birth mortality rates. So I'm looking at that right now, you know, because no one really talks about it. And like, maternal death rates are on the rise. They're four times more likely to happen than any other race. Mm. In St. Louis, especially North County, is very susceptible to it. Mm. So right now I'm trying to continue my education by going to graduate school. So hopefully mm-hmm. we'll public health to learn so much more about it so I can, you know, eradicate these disparities of, like, you know, having a free health clinic, you know, and whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. really all new for me. Right. So yeah.
New's okay, though. Yeah. You know, new's okay. And what's great about what you just said is that you're going to something specific. Mm-hmm. You're going to, I mean, as opposed to, like, earlier today, someone white asked me a question about racism, and just, don't you get overwhelmed as a Black person? It's like, we Black people are used to it. I mean, we wake up and that, so it's yeah. it's not a matter of whether we're going to deal with it, it's in what way mm-hmm. we're going to do it. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. throwing the ball to you, Kiana, how do you yeah. deal with it in your work?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's, for me, the work is about what I do kind of as a student of history, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, kind of uncovering the ways in which, you know, race and racism, you know, are kind of made and remade through policy, through everyday life, through decision making and so forth. I think it's a powerful kind of lesson, really. So there's much to be, I think, learned through historical kind of analysis. And so in my classroom, learning from my students and kind of introducing these topics and giving them a sense of kind of ownership over the learning experience, and hopefully that they kind of contribute to our own learning, has been really, really powerful. And talking with members of the community especially has been really, really helpful. And I think it's part of the work that's important to me, in the sense of staying kind of connected to the communities that first inspired me to study this in the first place.
Right.
And I consider that kind of work really, really important to thinking about how, you know, what we do with this project of kind of eradicating, you know, racism or kind of dismantling oppression. I mean, mm-hmm. it's the work of community, of building community and connection, mm-hmm. kind of intra-racially, but also beyond, but even kind of within Black spaces, even, I think is crucially important.
You mm-hmm. said eradicating racism,
sure.
and then you changed it to dismantling
yeah.
oppression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's interesting that you did that, because in my mind,
yeah.
I think you can do the second,
sure.
but you can't mm-hmm. really do the first.
Oh, interesting.
I think that you know, eliminating racism is like eliminating people who consider blue their favorite color.
Mm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
you can't mm-hmm. really get inside of people's heads,
right?
But you can, sort of like what you're talking about with health, mm-hmm. you can dismantle mm. racist institutions, policies, mm-hmm. legislations, mm-hmm, the things mm-hmm. that actually impact us. Mm-hmm, you know, you're from St. Louis also. How has yeah. that shaped your life's work?
Yeah, well, deeply. I mean, I grew up in St. Louis in the 80s and 90s, essentially, and saw, very powerful and deeply disturbing forms of kind mm-hmm. of racialized poverty, racism, to bring that back in, sexism, just a lot of kind of problems around the city too, this kind of divide between city and suburb, St. Louis City, St. Louis mm-hmm. County.
And we talked about that. We
yeah.
talked about that before the podcast mm-hmm. started, about
right.
St. Louis is very much a city that's into its divisions.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
It's the most segregated.
Yeah.
I think it's number 5.
Mm-hmm. It's always topping kind of yeah. the charts, right? Yeah, but this deeply divided city, as you said, and wanting to kind of make sense of that as a young person, not really knowing mm-hmm. what, you know, how to make sense of that, but wanting to. And so that inspired kind of my study of the city, really trying to make sense of the longer history there and where I'm kind of situated within that. So mm-hmm. I knew I would study the city when I got a chance to.
So you're also are both, you know, you're a recent grad, mm-hmm. Tiana, you teach here, mm-hmm. Kiana.
Yeah.
And I have found, as someone who graduated from law school here a couple decades ago, that when the MU issues came up, that so many people who aren't Black were just so, particularly grads, are just so shocked to hear about racism. They're like, well, I didn't see it. What is it about racism that makes people occupy the same space but see entirely different things? I know. I didn't hand it. I didn't toss the easy one, did
no,
I?
No.
I don't know. I can only look at it in the perspective of like what I've experienced in my class, especially with like white students. Like I always feel like there's like some sort of like cognitive like dissonance. Like they are like really able to like, they live in two separate worlds, and for them to confront these types of injustice that we face, I think that it always like means that like they have to give up something. So whether it's the comfortability or their privilege or their advantages, like they have to give it up. I don't know, like I guess maybe they're not willing to give it up, or they just don't really care. I don't know. But I don't know.
Yeah,
but that's a question I still ponder too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure actually to the of the answer to that, but I think there's something about the way that, you know, kind of racism works institutionally, you know, that it produces, it can produce these very divergent experiences. And when you lack kind of spaces to bring that out in the open, right, then it's very easy to kind of establish like blindnesses, you know, for some, when others, as you said, are living it kind of every day and see it in all kinds of forms. I think it speaks kind of to the way that it works, but also the way that the fact that there is a kind of chasm that separates us in many ways, that it's hard to just even see these things. At the same time, I think, I don't know, if you look hard enough, you do see them. So it sounds seems kind of contradictory to me in some ways. I mean, they are blatant on the other end, I think. So, it's kind of a quandary. Maybe it's like a puzzle of some sort, but I see it in both those ways, I guess.
it's hard for me to get it sometimes too. This is Table for Three. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson, talking with Dr. Kiana Irvin and Tiana Glass here at KBIA Studio. We're talking about civil rights history and activism, and especially the leadership of Black women in Missouri, historically and today. To learn more about this podcast and the Green Duck Lounge, go to greenduckproject.com. Kiana, can you tell us a little bit more about your book?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So it's about a history of a Black freedom movement in St. Louis through the work of working class Black women, essentially. So these are stories about women who lived in various parts, well, mostly in the city of St. Louis, and who waged all kinds of struggles around the right to jobs, decent housing, respect, dignity, regard, recognition, from about the 30s through or up leading up to the 1960s. So it's kind of a, what I like to think of it as a kind of prehistory of the modern civil rights movement that figures that puts Black working class women at the center.
Great.
Yeah.
What is the one thing you, in both of you can weigh in on this, because you've just studied it and you teach it and you've written a book about it. What is the one thing that you think that people don't know about Black women in the movement for greater equality?
I mean, I think one thing that comes to mind is just that these women that I've studied are speaking from and inspired by the particularity of their own experience, and along with that, their stories become useful to a broad kind of array of people in terms of, you know, working class concerns more broadly, racial justice concerns more broadly, right? So they're speaking about the right, their right as Black women to have access to decent, you know, paying jobs and to live in decent neighborhoods and so forth. And that became central to forming a really kind of broad and generalized understanding of what justice really meant, right? So to take, more recently, kind of the example of Black women kind of voting, right, and having these outstanding, you might say, numbers in terms of how they're voting and moving these elections in certain ways. I mean, they're certainly voting in their own interests, right? In their own kind of, in the particular of their own experience, for their own kind of survival. But that becomes important to, again, these larger projects around racial and kind of economic justice. And I think that the fact that they inspire, kind of throughout history and today, inspire these broader movements and help define these broader movements, I think is often a point that's lost. We often mm-hmm. tend to just think of them as particular or unique, but mm-hmm. they're beyond. It moves beyond that too, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm from Kansas City. You two are from St. Louis. All three of us have our MU experiences. What is it about Missouri that makes it a almost microcosm for the entire country in terms of race and civil rights?
Yeah. I mean, Missouri, you know, has been kind of for a long time. I mean, not just in the 21st century, the 20th century, the 19th century. You know, this state has been kind of at the center of debates over race and class for very, you know, in every kind of major episode, you might say, from the Civil War to, of course, questions around, like, I mean, St. Louis, for instance, was home to several key Supreme Court cases around, like, housing in the 20th century. You mentioned restrictive covenants, I believe, in your play, Michelle. Like, mm-hmm. that, you know, that important 1940s case around that out of St. Louis. So it's long been a kind of, as you said, microcosm of these questions and even anticipating kind of national trends around race and housing, segregation and the like. So what we're seeing kind of, what we've seen with Ferguson, you know, Ferguson as a kind of catalyst for the movement for Black lives, is just kind of right in keeping with that, the longer history of this state and these cities especially playing an important national role. Yeah.
I think that people forget that Missouri was held on to slavery mm-hmm. with both hands, mm-hmm. feet, and that the remnants of that were not that long ago. Right. I think that's what people right. forget right. about our history as a country when it comes to race, is that we're not talking a country that is 700, 800, 900 years old. I mean, Emancipation Proclamation was not that long ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm learning a lot right now, so.
it is, and we're all learning. We're all thinking about these issues because, again, most of us who are Black are not mm-hmm. that many generations out of slavery,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which means that most of the whites who we interact with are not that many generations outside of slavery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tiana, did you have like a sense of this history growing? So you grew up in St. Louis like in the 2000s?
Yeah,
yeah.
2000s, born 1994. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah, did you have any sense of this kind of history when you were like mm-hmm. like growing up? And I don't know.
Well, to be honest, mm-hmm. I would say no. Mm-hmm. I always like had these feelings of like feeling less than, or like even being afraid of cops without my parents even, you mm-hmm. know, saying like, oh, like don't trust a cop. Like I've always had that feeling. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it wasn't really until I got to college and until Mike Brown happened that mm-hmm. I was like able to contextualize all of my experiences, you know, into words, because I've always experienced injustices, like, right. you know, all the way from like my third grade teacher putting me in a remedial class because I stuttered and she thought mm-hmm. I couldn't read mm-hmm. even though I was like, you know, ahead of many students. And also, you know, teachers just not, you know, believing in my ability to get things done or to like, you know, perform good work. So, mm-hmm. you know, I've always experienced that, but I've never been able to, you know, contextualize that or even like right. really like learn about my own history mm-hmm. until I got this opportunity yeah. of going to college. I even know I was going to college until I was a senior in high school because mm-hmm. it wasn't presented to me. Mm-hmm. And I was overlooked a lot of the time. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay. So what do you think is the best goal mm. we can have with this Green Duck Project and getting people to think differently about right. race, or to think
yes.
about race.
Yes, yes. One, I guess, and this is, yeah, I've been thinking about this, and one thing is an appreciation of history. And I think that comes through really strongly in the play, through the character Bailey. And I shouldn't say too much, right?
About don't say too much.
I don't know if I should name the character. Maybe we should take that part out. But the significance of a kind of historical consciousness and historical awareness can really, really provide a kind of not so much a blueprint as much as a perspective. You know, you get a sense of how enduring the problem of kind of racial oppression is, right? And how it lives on and is remade and refashioned to new contexts, but is there, right? And I think, yeah, history gives us that. And I think the play really, really, really shows that. So one thing, yeah, we can get out of that is the significance of historical consciousness and the ways that these stories kind of live on and are kind of retold, you might say, through new lives. Mm-hmm. But also maybe thinking about kind of beyond, you know, when this play is done, kind of how do these stories resonate again locally? Mm-hmm. And the fact that this is a local story, I think, really resonates with me, right? Because it kind of shores up the point about Missouri history being deeply significant to thinking about race in particular, right? How it's played out, but maybe we can appreciate the significance of the local story in trying to make sense of these things today.
I think narratives are so important. I mean, I think that there's a reason why Black Panther movie, and we can pick a TV show. Pick a TV show,
right?
Can make people discuss things in a way that they don't discuss. If you just say, here's a history book, mm-hmm. let's talk about page 61.
Exactly.
And I think it's our obligation, mm-hmm. I think, to keep having those conversations, it's my obligation to write plays that people make people talk.
Right.
But I think it's all of our obligations to talk about the movies, the TV shows, mm-hmm. and when they get them wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when they get them wrong. The conversations that people are having about Black liberation because of the character Killmonger, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and then I saw a piece on Killmonger and his relationship with women. I won't go into that,
right.
But it was deep, and I'm like, what? Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's always something to talk about if you're willing to have the conversation in the first place. Tiana and Dr. Ergin, thank you so much for joining us at Table for Three today. The Green Duck Lounge is a play about Missouri civil rights history and current issues and activism. It played recently at MU's Rheinsberger's Theater. I'm Michelle Tyreen Johnson, playwright, and we're continuing the discussions about issues raised in the play. Table for Three is produced by Janet Zaidi and me, Michelle Tyreen Johnson, with help from Matt Honan, Landon Jones, KBIA, and KCUR Studios. Zee Chong Fu and Mei Ying Wu were our digital producers. Thank you for joining our Table for Three and the Green Duck Lounge. Continue the discussion at greenduckproject.com.